In South Sudan, gender-based violence remains a serious challenge across the country. So at the moment, more than 100 backlog cases of GBV are pending trial across the country. So the judiciary has responded by setting up a mobile court with four judges to fast-track these cases within 1 month. And there are also plans to establish a dedicated GBV court in Wau, Western Bahar Ghazali State. Amidst these efforts, civil society voices continue to stress the urgency of ensuring justice for survivors. So joining us this morning live in the studio is Jacqueline Nasiwa, the Executive Director of the Center for Inclusive Governance, Peace and Justice. She has been vocal about the need to end impunity and guarantee survivors access to justice. We will be speaking to her about the situation, the barriers, and the way forward. Good morning, Jacqueline, and thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Miraya, and good morning, listeners.
Right. And you have been engaging closely on issues of gender-based violence. How would you describe the current reality for survivors seeking justice in South Sudan?
We work with survivors, including survivors of conflict-related sexual violence, and also with children born out of rape during violations in conflict setting. So the current, I could say, situation for survivors is that largely they have not gotten justice, or I could say they are not able to get remedies for what happened to them. And they also go through stigma in the communities, in society, and at the family level. Mm. And this stigma comes as a result of our cultural issues and also the marginalization of women in the community. Mm. So these survivors, most of them have not gotten justice. And particularly if we focus on conflict-related sexual violence, but also some of the gender-based violence in the families where we have even rape of young girls, we have a rape of women, largely they go unaddressed. And if you talk about gender-based violence, it's broad. Mm. We are even having domestic violence, which comes with physical beating, which comes with neglect, which comes with emotional torture, and also sometimes it comes with issues to do with economic torture of the women, where sometimes they are denied access to economic, they become vulnerable in terms of their economic status. The men sometimes deny their wives money for food, deny the children, don't pay their fee, and all these are forms of gender-based violence.
And some are not allowed to work, so they will not have any access to money.
Yes, yes. We have many who even deny their wives to work. Mm. And sometimes if the wives are working, they are the ones who are entitled for their pay, the salary, they are the ones to decide and all this. So this brings violence in the family. And you'll find that because of the culture, they will say, he's your husband. You don't have to do anything. You have to abide because he paid for the bride price and you are supposed to listen to him and you have to give. So women find it very difficult. And then also in some of the families, they don't even allow women to own property because they believe you are a property, and how can you own property?
Yes.
Or you are a property to be sold to the other family once they marry you. So we don't give you our family property. Mm. So these are the challenges in the domestic context, what women go through, but also in the conflict setting, you'll find that women become vulnerable to men in uniform because during the conflict, it's women who are left behind. They are the ones who are displaced. They cannot defend themselves. So you find that rape becomes imminent for them.
Mm. Yeah. Now, Jacqueline, we understand that a mobile court has been set up to handle over 100 pending GBV cases across the country. From a civil society perspective, and also you're a woman and you have been dealing with these cases, how effective do you think this approach of mobile court, will it really resolve these issues of GBV across the country?
The GBV court and maybe the mobile courts for this matter, they are a good concept, but they are not sustainable.
Mm.
One is that they come maybe once in a year for a period of 1 month. And you can imagine the trial process is not only for 1 month. And then someone may want to appeal, and then it's gone. So I think that instead of investing more on the mobile courts, strengthening the judiciary capacity at all level becomes very important.
Mm.
And that means that even where there are no courts, we need to start looking at how do we establish courts in those places. And in terms of the infrastructure, in terms of the judges to be deployed and all this. So sustainability of access to justice is very paramount. And I think the mobile courts act as an interim remedy where there's the large backlog of cases, maybe where there are no courts existing.
Mm.
It's an interim. But we need something sustainable and long-term, and that means we need to invest in the development of the judiciary and their capacity to respond to GBV.
Yeah, now many survivors, they face stigma, and they also go through trauma after they experience GBV. What more needs to be done to ensure that their needs beyond the courtroom are given to them? Because they need more than just handling this case and halas, yeah. We're done with it.
I always say that justice without compensation is not justice.
Mm-hmm.
Because you come to court because you expect to get your rights from the court. So you find that sometimes it takes long for the survivors to get their remedies. And for conflict-related sexual violence, their trials normally happen in the military courts.
Mm.
And there is no, I could say, set aside fund to compensate the victims from the military.
Mm-hmm.
So even if they are tried there, they end up not getting compensated. So economic empowerment of the survivors become important. And I think if you look at the causes of GBV and at the domestic level, most of it is poverty.
Mm.
And as you know, South Sudanese are struggling with the issue of poverty. The economy is very hard for the people, no money. And you have a family to take care of. You have children. The husband, traditionally as it was, cannot provide. The wife cannot provide. So when there is no food, you know, people start quarreling and it ends up in the gender-based violence. So economic empowerment of the survivors is very paramount.
Mm.
And when this incident happened, as I said, there's a lot of stigma. So psychosocial and trauma counseling for the victims becomes very important.
Mm.
There are victims who may decide, I want to commit suicide.
Right.
Because I didn't intend to have being raped or gang raped. I didn't intend to have this child. Now I have this child and I cannot take care of the child. The father is not there. I don't know. So trauma is a lot among the survivor community. And I think even after the trial, they need to be going through the counseling and services so that they can be able to move on. The other thing is that we need to guarantee their safety. You mm. know, some of the perpetrators, they live within the community.
Right.
So we have cases where even neighbors are the ones who are committing these crimes. Or, for example, maybe if it is rape, defilement, sodomy, they are neighbors. And then you find that they are brought to the police, and the following day they are just out of the police.
Mm-hmm.
And then the trial process is going on. They have moved to another location.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot even be found.
Right.
And the victim is left to look for the perpetrator. And you have to pay money. And this is what we always tell the police. Your institution is not institutionalizing how to support
the
logistics
mm-hmm.
for looking for the perpetrators. And the survivors just give up because they feel like they don't have the money first, and then they pay a lot and they don't get justice at the end. Mm-hmm. So that means that the police institution also need to put a budget aside for mobility. And I think if you look across the rule of law institutions, they are all crying for lack of funding. And we always tell the executive, please prioritize justice and make sure that there is money for these justice institutions so that they can be able to avail access to justice to the people. And you know, one of the things I see is that when people feel they don't have justice, they take the law into their hands.
Right.
So we remain in the cycle of violence until we put and impunity and end, and the revenge becomes imminent. He's my neighbor, he raped my daughter, I will also revenge. And then you see that we live in a community which is very violent.
Yes, Jacqueline, you mentioned something important about the impunity, and you said this is a very big challenge that we have in the country. Now, what systematic changes are needed to ensure that perpetrators are really held accountable, whether you are of a high rank or of a high position, whether you have power, you have money? No, you have done a crime, you must be held accountable for. What should authorities really do?
I think authorities need to embark on intentional upholding of the rule of law. And I say that there should be resources for this. Because if you go to the police, they'll say, we don't have a car, or we have a car, we don't have a fuel to go and bring the perpetrator. And you have a victim who is very vulnerable. He's not even having money for food in the house, and you're asking this victim to give you money to go and fuel the police or whatever cars are there to be fueled. So we are not helping in terms of this. And this country, we need to prioritize rule of law, and we need to prioritize access to justice, so that we avoid these things. The second one is that we need to embark on more awareness raising in the community so that people know, like, gender-based violence is a crime.
Right.
And this means even including at the grassroots level.
And so I feel like men need to be included so that they know if they commit this crime, this is what is going to happen to them.
Yeah, and I think we work also with men. We have men whom we call them, like, community action groups, duty bearers, male allies or male champions. So these are all groups that exist, and we try to do as many as we can to make sure that men are part of these conversations. And in some of the spaces, we got some positive attitude from some of the men, and actually they are standing against this. And we also got those who are still biased, and they think, like, gender-based violence is not an issue. And this is where we want to do a lot and dialogue about it. And the law must be respected. Once someone is charged, regardless of who is that person, they must serve their sentence until it's done. And, you know, in some countries, when you rape someone, even in our region, like Kenya, Uganda, and name them, Rwanda, if you, for example, if you rape a young girl, you will be charged and you serve your 14 years before you come out.
Yeah, regardless of
Who you are. But for us here, they can even charge someone for 1 year for rape. Or they can ask you to solve it out of the court.
And by the way, Jacqueline, this is a question. Why some families always, they decide to handle these GBV cases outside the court at the family level, not in the court?
You know, one of the things, there are three things. One is that when you rape a lady or you elope, we don't have even the vocabulary called rape. In some of the cultures, the communities, they have a belief that when a girl is now of age and she's supposed to be married but she's refusing, the boy who wants to marry will mobilize their peer and they go and carry this girl. And then the brothers will now come looking for their sister and now negotiate for marriage, regardless of whether she likes it or not. That is part of the tradition. The other one is that our society thinks that once a girl is being raped, there is no way this girl can, you know, live her life and what. She has to be married to avoid the shame. So the rapist or the perpetrator is forced to marry this girl. And then they start negotiating for bride price. And of course, you know, our bride price here comes with a lot of monetary value. You have to pay maybe 10 cows, others even 100 cows for marriage and the gifts that come to the family. And with this poverty, people now take like, okay, you have raped our girl or you have done this, you have to get into marriage. For the married people, you are not supposed to talk when your husband beats you because also there's bride price which is paid. So all this contribute to that. The other one is that when my family feels that going to the police, following up the case, coming to the court, the charge may be 2 cows or whatever. It's better for me to negotiate for a marriage where I get 8 cows and 10 cows.
And here the interest of the survivor is not taken into consideration.
We have seen our sisters who even didn't want to marry the person that the family wants, and then they just force her. This is the person I want. Mm. And this is all because of the poverty which is in the community. But I could also say that we need to have strong laws that condemn gender-based violence. And we are having currently the anti-gender-based violence bill, which is with the Minister of Justice, and Minister of Gender is following that closely. Mm. We need to expedite and bring this bill to the parliament so that it is passed, and at least the courts and the police, they have a law that guides them on understanding gender-based violence, and for this matter also consent and all these kinds of things, so that we avoid these rampant cases of gender-based violence in our community and in our country. Mm. The other one is that we need to also embark on trainings and capacity building of our law enforcement agencies to start understanding what is gender-based violence and why are we prioritizing it, and what is the impact in the community and in the society, and where can we maintain law and order so that we avoid these things of revenge and violence in our community.
Mm. Now, Jacqueline Nasiwa, because of time, I'm going to combine for you two questions. The first question is, how important is peace and stability in tackling GBV, and what link do you see between conflict and also the widespread of sexual violence? And I want you to conclude with, what is your message for authorities, especially as South Sudan works to strengthen the rule of law and justice system?
Okay, there is no thin line between conflict and gender-based violence. Mm. So if you see that in most of our conflict settings, there is always gender-based violence, and for this matter, conflict-related sexual violence. And we have these reports documented by the UN, documented by international NGOs, and even by local NGOs. Mm. And for your information, we also work with the South Sudan Survivors Network, which is a network of survivors who have suffered violence during a conflict. So when there is a conflict, there is a breakdown of rule of law. Mm. And that means that the communities who are there, they become very vulnerable. And even in the aftermath of the violence, you'll find that still people live in the vacuum of no rule of law. So say, for example, in Juba, there is no violence currently going on, but you'll find that we are still experiencing gender-based violence. Mm. So without peace, we are likely to see this pattern continuing. And in regards to what needs to be done, we work closely also with authorities. Mm. Like this week, we are having the training with the judiciary of South Sudan with the support of the Norwegian People's Aid. We have brought them from the States, and we work closely with the office of the Chief Justice and the Director for Training. Mm. We are training the judges on understanding GBV response and their role as judges in terms of access to justice and protection of the victims during the trial processes. We look at ethical values of confidentiality and so forth. So we need to make sure that these key institutions like the judiciary, they are supported. Mm. And we are having the Judicial Reform Committee, which went all over the states. They have understood what is happening in terms of infrastructure, the access to justice needs of the communities, and so forth. So the judiciary currently is in their need of resources to develop their infrastructure and also to equip the judges so that they can be able to provide access to justice to the communities. So it's an appeal to the executive to make sure that the judiciary get funding for these kinds of support. Without this funding, the judges will be handicapped not to be able to provide this and to protect the women who are mostly at the grassroots level and who demand justice. The other one is that we need to see that our constitution also condemns gender-based violence. And in some constitutions, they have a specific one article that says gender-based violence is a violation and it is condemned. So this is what also we are looking into, and expediting the anti-gender-based violence bill is very important, and ensuring that perpetrators are not... I think most of the time we just glorify perpetrators, but I could say we don't need to glorify them, but we need to condemn them, and that we need to make sure that our society is safe.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline Esiwa, for joining us this morning.